I'm Jerry, chapter master of a local club called the Adeptus Fanaticus, here to talk to you today about Warhammer 40,000.
And I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and let's just get this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield started. Welcome back to Season 3 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And if you're watching the video version, you know that, well, there's two voices, but you can only see me, so that other voice is just kind of in your head, but pay attention to it anyway. So, what we're talking about today is Warhammer 40,000 and a little bit of Games Workshop stuff, just kind of going over some of the big news events and then eventually kind of speculating rumors and things coming up towards later in the year. So first off, though, I do want to welcome Jerry back to the show. He was back, was episode 4 this year, or 3, 4 this year. He's talking about he's a Warhammer 40K fanboy, and he's on last season also. So thanks for coming back, Jerry.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And what we're going to start off first with, I want to start with a bit of a rant, a kind of an angry thing here. This, right in front of me, is a can of Games Workshop Primer, which is now $15, which, of course, we know only a couple of months ago used to be $10. This actually went up in price prior to the June 1st price increase. And personally, this is getting a little bit excessive. What do you think, Jerry?
Well, you know, self-admittedly, I am the fanboy. And I'll tell you, I haven't been in the hobby as long as I have. You pay for what you get. And, yeah, $15 is a huge price increase. And we can speculate as to why they did it, why the price increases are happening. But as a product, I've got to tell you that the Games Workshop Primer is some of the best out there. I've used them all. I've used every kind you can possibly say, right down to using testers. And frankly, I don't get the same kind of quality out of my paint, out of my my hobby projects as I do if I use another paint scheme. It goes on smooth. There's no ruffle. I mean, if I have to use something like there's a primer I thought called Armor, it's a different type of finish that I don't really like. $15 is a lot. You know, we can always go back on how you save money and how you do that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I believe you pay for what you get.
I'm going to agree. I mean, it is an excellent product. I do really like it. I haven't tried any other primers. What I'm probably going to do is just do it as an official test. I'll probably get a hold of some figures, all kind of the same figure. Actually try some tests of different primers for you guys at some point, either on an episode of the Tabletop Battlefield or one of my videos on YouTube. So look for that in the future.
Exactly. You know, I would tell you that if you are newer to the hobby and the $15 is too much for you, go out and try something else. Do it on one or two models, see how it turns out, and then go with it. But, you know, for a veteran like me, I've got so much stuff. I even got cans of primer laying around that are unfinished. Buying a can of primer once in a while is really not that big of a deal at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, I'm going to go with what I know and with what I like.
Yeah, but on topic of YouTube, though, I want to show off one more thing I've got here. On topic of trying to do things cheaper than Games Workshop, I just slapped down a gigantic case here. It's one I actually built for to carry my Tau Empire army, some of the figures out in front of me. And it's actually a nice custom case. Well, not really. It's a giant toolbox, but with custom foam things in it that basically allow me to carry a 3,000-point Tau Empire army I think I paid just over $20 for this thing. So if you guys are interested in looking at ways to save money and don't want to go with the GW cases, which they're nice, but they are very expensive, I did a little video on YouTube how you can kind of, what foam you need, how you can kind of cut it up and size it for your figures. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that so you can check it out if you want to find a nice way to build a cheap case.
And but, you know what, Jason, I also, you know, I saw that, and I got to tell you that there's also another one out there. If you ever gone to the fan site for Blood Angels called exlibrismortis.org, Ex Libris Mortis is the Library of Death.
Maybe. I probably encountered it at some point, but it's not a regular site of mine to go visit.
He has got, the guy's a great hobbyist. I mean, he's diving into truly the traitor's heresy acts right now of trying to create a CGI kind of movie. I mean, that's exactly how far his hobby has driven him. He's even built a Reaver and a Warhound. He's got that on. But he also has a way to build your own army case out of a suitcase, and it'll carry something like a 4,000-point army.
That's nice. If you have a link to that, go ahead and send it to me. I'll stick it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
I'll go ahead. I'll see if I can do that for you. And I will try to actually post a link to the YouTube video. I know in the past I've said I was going to post a link and didn't. I'll try to actually do it this time. But anyway, enough of those things out of the way. Let's get to the news. I think, first of all, now it's been a little bit over, well, about a month and a half since the June 1st price increase, so we've got a chance to kind of evaluate everything. And I guess in terms of what actually went up, it's at least for Warhammer 40,000, I didn't check out some of the fantasy or Lord of the Rings stuff. I'm sure you can probably comment on the Lord of the Rings stuff a little bit more. But it seems to be a lot of the things that were $40 went up to like $41.25.
Yeah.
So
it's a little odd, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't really any specific reason for it, because even it wasn't necessarily translate to like increase in plastic prices, because I know like the basing kit that I reviewed a couple episodes ago actually also went up to $41.25, even though, you know, doesn't necessarily use plastic, like as much plastic anyway as some of the model kits. And the squad boxes really didn't go up. Most of them are still $35. I think in Warhammer Fantasy some of them went up to like $40 or $41.
Well, I can, you know, I can. We could speculate all day.
Yeah.
And based on my experience on industry, what I do for a living, I can, you know, the most plausible excuse I can tell you is that it's possible with the flat line of the cost that they did. You know, the first thing you have to understand is Games Workshop's run by hobbyists, not necessarily businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the business side kind of seems wishy-washy at times, and they don't always make what would seem to be logical decisions. But the pricing that I can figure out is that maybe they did a flat fee across the board, so all products of a certain kind were a certain rate. And what they did, what they projected was that the high sellers would offset the low sellers, so that at the end of the day, they still made the same profit, they just didn't track it by line. Well, maybe over the years, when they looked at that business model and said pricing model, they said, yeah, this ain't working so well. So they had to readjust their prices. In order to address that fact, you know, address like maybe, you know, I can give real examples, but for instance, the Giant, maybe it being $45, was costing more than that to manufacture, and the fact that they were doing high sales over here on Bane Blades wasn't enough to offset the high price of the manufacturing cost of the Giant. So that's the nearest I can figure it is.
Now, one thing I did notice in terms of kind of the odd $41.25 price, usually you think it might be $40.99 or $41.99 or something like that. The $41.25, if you do actually conversion to say euros or pounds, some of the prices that are on the British or European stores, $41.25 is about the same as some of the prices that, you know, that are more even on like the European stores.
So maybe that was it.
Yeah, they maybe set the European prices to a logical flat thing, and then they kind of converted it over to the United States dollar prices, which is, makes kind of a little bit of wonky prices, maybe, in some cases.
Yeah.
I guess... Go ahead.
No, I was going to...
I was just going to say, though, at what point is this too much is too much? I mean, let's imagine your typical $35 troop set. You know, either your 10 Space Marines, 12 Tau Fire Warriors, I think it's like the 16 Gaunts. How much will you actually pay for a box of those?
I don't know. I mean... Gosh, my mind's instantly jumping into economics of trying to figure out what the market would bear, and I guess over a couple weeks I could figure that out for you, kind of a snapshot. But the reality is, and this is something I tell people a lot, is that nobody said you have to play this game at 4,000 points.
You're right, yep.
Nobody has to walk in and drop $500 and bam, you got the whole army. The game is really best played at 1,000, 1,500, and I know you and I will probably get emails against that fact, but face it, GW does not say go out and play 2,000 points, play an Apocalypse Gale game right off the bat.
Yeah.
So in some respects, GW has always used price to control some of the ways the game is played. I mean, look at, I'll just give you the game I'm really kind of focused on right now, War of the Rings. One of the units in there that's really cool and I really want to use it would cost in excess of $400 the field, but it's really powerful. I mean, it's a kick butt unit. I remember this even from second edition. That you've priced to control the aspect of the game, so it isn't always just about the points of the list, and it isn't always about the rarity of the slot and stuff like that. They use price to control it. So, in a way, maybe they are also trying to control how big the arms race gets.
It could be.
So that, I mean, if you look at Ard Boys, not many people, I called around the stores that were doing Ard Boys here this year, they may have had like 10 people at each place.
Mm-hmm.
So not many people, and they, that's probably by GW's design. They 2,500 points is a lot of points, and a lot of tournament players want to field new armies every time. That's not easy to come out, especially in today's economic times and people's jobs and so forth. So, you know, it's all, again, if you're in this for the long run, you're not necessarily concerned about a 4,000-point army tomorrow. You're going to buy a couple models, paint them up, you know, play the game, and you're going to kind of grow it.
I guess just for me, from speaking from a perspective where I already have about maybe 3,500 points of Tau, I guess when I look at, you know, as prices go up, I'm not only am I already not going to buy a lot of more stuff because I already have a bunch of things, just the fact that prices go up a little bit more, I'm probably just to say, you know, screw it, I've got enough pieces to play with. I don't have a lot of incentive to buy more at this point.
Well, let me throw it at, back at you the other way. Let's take BattleTech.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. The click version of it. How you walk in and you buy the entire collection because it is that cheap, then where's the incentive for you to come back and buy more later?
Well,
you already bought
it. If you want me to go off of the business model of WizKids and MechWarrior, I actually don't like them because of that, because of all that kind of stuff. You're right.
But
it is.
But those are the two extremes.
You're right.
There's not at hobbyists. The reality is that GW, at the end of the day, believes and has proven it over the last 20 years of their existence that it doesn't matter how much the cost, it doesn't matter how much money you have, it is your hobby, you're going to spend the money on it.
Mm-hmm.
You might not spend $100, but you're going to spend 20. You're going to spend 10. But it's just like, for the adults that listen, it's like beer and cigarettes. You're going to go out to the bar, you may not do this frequently, but you're still going to do it.
Yeah.
So you are the rarity, and I'll guarantee you, and you're a different type of hobbyist. You aren't just in it for Warhammer like me.
You're right.
Warhammer,
you're right.
All I do. You just like playing games, period.
Yeah.
I used to be like that way until I got a family, and then I only have time for so much.
That's going to happen someday to me. But, yeah, like you're saying, I've also got 40K here on my shelf. I've got HeroScape. I got Monster Apocalypse, World of Warcraft. I even still got HeroQuest sitting there, StarCraft, Monster Apocalypse.
Exactly.
Yeah, so for me, I guess I look at it a little bit differently because, you know, if Warhammer gets too high, screw it, I'm going to go play War Machine, or I'm going to go play, maybe dig up MechWarrior again, I don't know. But, I mean, I guess for me, maybe it's just going to be harder for them when new players come in when they see their, like, Warhammer prices getting higher, but then new games like the Arcane Legions game is obviously kind of going after Warhammer Fantasy a little bit. Have you seen that game at all?
By I have seen
Expeditions?
It. I have seen it, yes.
So
but,
I don't know.
You know, but again, I have to say it this way. Not one of these games is going to do anything different than GW has. A lot of times they're newer, and they're going to take cuts to gain a fan base.
Yeah.
But over years, they're going to follow back to GW's model.
Right.
GW is the leader in this industry.
You're right.
Not WizKids, but Privateer Press is following now GW's model.
You're right, it kind of is. They're doing
And they all get their materials from the same place. I mean, it's like, I'll give you a good example. It's like baby formula. Everyone says, oh, you've got to have this name brand baby formula. Versus the generic brand you get off the shelf. Pick up two of those cans, the generic one from Kroger or wherever, and pick up the high-end stuff,
mm-hmm.
and look at the manufacturing label. They're both manufactured by a separate company and the same company.
Yeah.
It's like the glue that we buy in the stores. It's just the same stuff. Everyone just puts their store label on it.
So the more Well, go ahead. Sorry.
GW and Privateer Press get their raw materials from pretty much the same places.
Yeah, and I guess the moral of the story is, it's not how much you're willing to pay. It's what brand you like best. Do you like the style of Warhammer 40K or do you like War Machine? I guess you're right. You're going to pay whatever you're going to pay. I mean, War
Machine
started to come out with plastic figures this year, which back 4 years ago, their whole model, you know, the whole slogan of the game was making fun of Games Workshop because they had plastic figures. So, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know,
they'll do what they need to do.
Exactly. So they're going to follow GW's model. There's money in that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's up to you as the hobbyist of how you're going to control your hobby. It's not like the ability to go spend billions of dollars every month. You've got to be an adult and realistic about it.
Yeah. But anyway, enough about talk about prices. We can go on that for a while and whatnot. I guess we'll just see. GW keep raising prices. I guess if it gets too high, people go elsewhere, and you know that's their mistake. But we'll see what happens with them. Let's jump on to the big story, of course, which I'm now putting down in front of me: Planet Strike, the new, relatively small expansion for Warhammer 40,000, $25 for the base book, an assortment of terrain. Have you got the book yet, Jerry?
I absolutely do, and I've got one of each of the terrains.
Already?
It's You know, this is where GW does it right. The books are way below what they really should be charging for these things. And the terrain for planet strike. Oh, absolutely. Have you, the Space Marine Codex? It's around what, $25-$30, and that thing's as thick as most novels are.
Yeah, I guess so, maybe, because I mean, I keep thinking, looking at the War Machine Prime Rule book, which is also $25, about three times as thick as the Planet Strike book is, and full color too. But then again, that is probably Privateer's Press' cheapest book. Some of the other books are a little more expensive.
Right.
So maybe just being a lower price gets you in, then you know how that goes. But
and the terrain, I mean, for the whole set, one of each, it's like it was like $100. So where before GW really didn't have a whole lot of terrain, you had to make it all yourself. So you had your table might look crappy. You're not going to go out some very professional looking terrain, fairly cheap. Considering, I mean, and you know what everyone's going to say? Oh, you know, it's far cheaper if I build it. Not if you add in the opportunity cost of you building it, of the time it took you to, which the opportunity cost is the time it took you to actually do it, all the material you had to buy, you know, I'm going to use this bit here, this bit here. Price that all out. I guarantee you're going to spend the same, if not more, to build your own terrain.
You could. I guess, you could. But I guess for the people who don't play 40K, the basic gist of Planet Strike is simulating, assault missions on planets where your troops are doing the initial assault where they're dropping in trying to take fortifications and objectives, right?
Absolutely. It's about space marines. I mean, the vision of a space marine is an angel of death who's an airborne trooper who drops on the planets and he starts just kicking ass as he's taking names and destroying on the battlefield. And the book that comes to my head for those that know and if those are interested is Storm of Iron, one of the best Warhammer 40K books that they wrote, written by Grant McNeil. And it's actually one of the few Black Library books that were re-released. And it's about a chaos assault on an Imperium-held fortress. So with Planet Strike, you can recreate those kind of battles and you can have campaigns that reflect that. So the game, the way the game plays, it's one of these variants, kind of like with Cities of Death was, where the rules are altered slightly to give that more of that cinematic feel for airborne strikes on an Imperial held world or a Chaos held world or Xenos, whatever, but it's against a fortified structure or so forth. So the game plays very destructive. I mean, they tell you right up front, be prepared to lose models.
Yeah, some of the things, I mean, just, I guess, briefly in terms of the rule changes you can expect, there's a little bit difference in force construction in terms of, you know, what units you can take for both the attacker and defender. They're different. You've obviously got the ability where most of your guys can drop anywhere in the battlefield where normal 40K, they couldn't. You got your stratagems, you know, where you can boost up your force with different special abilities. I'm looking to actually try some of those out. Some look really nice for the Tau. And, of course, some basic building rules about fortresses and those kind of things. So I don't think there's not really a lot, like I said, not a huge change in rules. It's almost kind of like an over-glorified scenario situation, really.
Exactly. The GW has never done this type of thing before, so where the rules really change. First of all, it's how you hold objectives up to even one model, just like an Apocalypse can hold the objective.
Yeah, yep.
The stratagems really change the way they played. It's also, for those who might have played 3rd edition, someone's attacker, someone's defender, and like you said, the force work changes on that. Well, just like the old 3rd edition mission of Bunker Assault, there is a preliminary bombardment, which is extremely deadly to the defender.
That's in this too, yeah.
So there is, it's subtle rule changes that alter our strategy a little bit. And in fact, every unit can deep strike now, regardless. So,
yep.
And if you deep strike, I think you can also then assault into close combat.
If you had the deep strike ability originally, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, the effects are subtle. And like anything, like Apocalypse and like Cities of Death, you actually have to read the book to get those subtleties. Otherwise, you're going to sit down and play a game of 40K or Planet Strike, and your opponent's going to chew you alive if you didn't read them.
Now, also, we should mention that there is, like, a mini-campaign, per se, because there's 6 different variations to the basic scenario. I mean, most of them aren't radically different. You know, there's some basic units have different special abilities. Like, some are fearless, some have, like, explosives they can detonate to try to, as, like, a last-ditch suicide effort kind of thing. But, I mean, it's a neat idea to play it. I almost would have liked to see maybe, instead of just Planet Strike by itself, maybe have like a book that had 4 or 5 totally unique scenarios in it that you could actually maybe there's a little bit more to it, maybe a little more campaign stuff to it.
Yeah, I've always felt that way too. I felt and maybe they would feel they're infringing on Forge World a little bit but then they don't really care considering what they've done with Apocalypse. But I've always felt some of GW's strength should be in creating books like Imperial Armor, where they recreate a historical period of 40K in the history of the timeline or so forth. And they've done that in the past with the Horus Heresy recreation. But they've avoided it for some reason, and maybe that's the very well. You know, they probably want you as the hobbyist to feel part of it. So you create the scenario, they just create the structure and the rules for you to do that. Yeah, I agree. I think it would be great if they came out with a campaign book. And on their website, they actually got downloads from past things in third and early third edition that they do. Like, you can actually run through a Dark Angels campaign on the Pisces Crusade.
Yeah, I remember there are a few things like that. I've seen, like, I know there's one for the Tau versus the Orcs, at least there was, used to be. Little mini campaigns like that.
Yep. They're all still there. The website's pretty crappy, so.
Yeah, I remember I tried to go to BloodBowl.com for the Blood Bowl game, and it just redirected me to the homepage of GW's site. I'm like, yeah, nice work, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But on the topic of Warhammer 40,000 campaigns, I know there's currently something called the Mighty Empire, so Warhammer Fantasy. You know, it has a little hex grid where you can kind of determine where your units are moving and collect resources based on, you know, where you control. Is there something like that for 40K coming out this year?
Absolutely, there is. It's called Planetary Empires, I think. But yeah, it's actually in the current edition of Warhammer, or of
White Dwarf.
Of White Dwarf, yeah.
Planetary Empires. Is it going to be same kind of idea with where you got little hexes and?
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. In fact, if you don't feel like buying the box set, there's absolutely no reason why you can't, as long as you didn't paint it strictly as a fantasy. But in fact, I'm looking at it right now.
There it is.
Yeah, it's got some unique pieces to look like ruined cities, and it looks like it's got city pieces that go inside of it. But you could even interlock it with your fantasy thing and create even a bigger map if you wanted to.
So this is really just like for a single planet. It's not like multiple star systems per se.
Right, but so, we haven't seen the rules yet.
Yeah.
So there might be rules in there for linking planets.
I guess you could do something crazy like the Babylon 5 game has, where you can have like a massive galaxy, then each then each star system has multiple planets you can fight in, and do crazy stuff like that. So,
yeah, and I've even got rules for that. You know, Jervis Johnson did something called Total War, where it was that before Apocalypse and all this was actually done. In fact, I think this is where Apocalypse came from, was this Total War concept, where he created rules for that, and he threw them out in Citadel Journal back in the day. My opinions on that kind of a scope of a campaign are many and varied, but at the end of the day, your average hobbyist is probably not going to do something this expansive. You know, y'all dream about it, y'all want to do it, but if you don't have the time to commit, you know, every week or every 2 weeks, whenever it is, show up, play your game, do what you got to do, it quickly falls apart.
Yeah, it's a very niche kind of market thing, and it was already a niche market hobby, so.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll probably pick one up just so I can have it, and on the off chance I find a couple guys that are truly dedicated to doing it.
Do you know what kind of, like, with the planet or the Mighty Empire set? Do you know what kind of rules in terms of campaigns came with it? Was it really detailed, or was it pretty basic stuff?
No, they were pretty basic.
Okay.
In fact, if you want some of the best campaign rules that GW ever did, they did it in what was called the General's Compendium.
Yep.
Those are
Warhammer Fantasy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it can be easily applied to. I've got tons of them that I've written myself or people have written for such a massive scale, but they were really rudimentary. How kind of like you could use a way of how you could use the pieces, and a lot of people replicate it because it is quick and easy. It's fast. Again, remember GW's goal is to get you out on the table quickly.
Hmm.
So I don't think we'll see too much difference in the 40K version of this.
So why don't we continue on the topic here of campaigns? And one thing I remember when I first got into Warhammer 40,000 is back early 2006. One of the big things that really got me started into it was the Medusa 5 summer campaign. They did the worldwide event. Did you play in that?
Oh, absolutely, I did.
That was a heck of a lot of fun to play in. You know, it was a great way for me to get me started, get excited about the universe. But GW hasn't done another one for 40K since then. Do we know any rumors about one coming up or anything?
No, and I don't think there's going to be one coming, maybe not until next year, even fantasy-based. There were, you know, if you didn't know, there's been a major shakeup in the corporate structure here in the U.S.
Really?
Oh, yeah, major. They merged Canada and North America.
Okay, yes, I remember hearing about that.
And
And ironically, I think they made like lower prices for Canada.
Yeah,
because exactly. They got to use our distribution system or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. Although a bunch of people lost their jobs as a result.
Oh, well, that's not necessarily a good thing.
But ultimately, and from what I know, but Jason, I don't know if I've told you, but I'm also a commando with GW, which is kind of like a extreme part-time employee, if that's what you want to call it. From what I know, the head of retail is in a flurry of activities trying to get everything restructured for next year.
Okay.
That includes games days, grand tournaments, the whole nine yards. He is actively engaged in trying to get that all on track. I mean, that's why all of a sudden the Ard Boys dates were now projected out next year, too. You know, you can't plan an event unless the event's got dates and so forth is his belief, and he's moving fast to get that done. So, you know, something coming out of UK that says, hey, doing a worldwide campaign, the U.S. is going to say, not ready.
Okay.
So if we see anything, it's not going to be until next year, and I'd be willing to bet it's probably going to be something on the order of, like, the Lucky 13, and it's probably going to be more fantasy.
Okay. Well, we can always hope for something new, but I want to go ahead.
There's nothing to say. You know, I've always been a big proponent of local guys, you know, club business. There's nothing, you know, there's no reason. I've done this here locally with the 40K Fight Club with about 50 people of clubs working together to create an online campaign to do and run it similar to the Black Crusade or the Eye of Terror campaign or even Medusa 5. And, you know, it's just never taken fruit. But, you know, there's nothing to say clubs can't band together to do that. I mean, we've got the internet. A lot of people, you know, some people have some great analytics. They can be done.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because on this show, even though we bash WizKids a lot, one of the things I really like what they did with MechWarrior early on was they made the universe really dynamic, where when you went to the store and you play, all the results got tabulated, planets would change hands really quickly, so you really see how you would influence the story, so then you know when a planet changed hands in a novel a few months down the road, you'd see that effect, and you could see now that, okay, it affected the story, because you know, a few months previous to that, the planet changed hands, really cool. And I guess I'd like to see GW do more of that, make the universe a little more dynamic, but...
That's not going to happen either, I mean... A lot of people wish you'd see it, but you know that was based. The real time thing was literally something that not only WizKids came up with, but was already established anyway. So, but in 40K, if the whole idea is that the Imperium is already on the edge of destruction.
Yeah.
So if a campaign was held that literally pushed them over the edge, then where's the storyline then?
Yeah, I could see how that could be. Yeah, but well, I don't know. Anyway, let's move. One thing I actually want to talk about a little bit more in Planet Strike is the terrain itself. Because we briefly mentioned it. So you got like a fortress. You've got is the fortress different than. One second. You got the bastion, then you got the fortress, which that combines the bastion with a few things, right?
Yep.
And then you've got, obviously, it's called the Sky Shield landing pad, which is kind of neat.
Oh, that is sweet. That's more than just neat.
I mean, that's a nice looking little thing where the sides fold down, so you give you guys invulnerable saves depending how they're set up. And you got the Aegis line, is that how you pronounce it? The Aegis line?
Yep.
Which is little defensive walls, and you got your interceptor guns. One thing I was talking to the GW employee about at one of the local stores is, obviously all this terrain really focuses heavily on the Imperium. I was asking him, are we going to see stuff for, say, the Tau or the Tyranids? And he's kind of like, not really. I mean, there's some custom mods you can do to take the Imperial stuff and turn it into, say, Chaos or Orcs. Like, but... In terms of, I guess, the Tau or the Tyranids, some of these more bizarre alien races, you're kind of getting a little bit left out, but I'm sure if you look around, you can find, there's some pictures in here of ideas you can get to kind of scratch build stuff. I guess there's some Forge World stuff you want to do it to build your own.
Yeah, it's not hard to build the other stuff, but you're right. They're going to tailor to the high sellers first.
I mean, I guess at least, though, the way the rules are designed, they're fairly generic. So, I mean, it's not like if you had the terrain piece for the Tau, it's pretty easy to adapt. Just slap on some pulse carbines or railgun or ion cannon. So that is one thing that's nice. The rules are not really specific to the Imperium, even though the models are.
Right.
I want to know, one thing the employee mentioned to me, he knows who you are. He's talked to you a lot. He's actually a member of Adeptus Fanaticus. You're apparently trying to build some super fortress?
Yeah. We have every year the 40K Fight Club does a picnic. Started out a few years ago with the release of one of the first Imperial Armors that started this trend, the Taros campaign, and we recreated the Taros campaign in about 12 hours.
Wow.
And we did it as a picnic. Out in the backyard, grilling burgers, having beer, the whole nine yards, and we played 40K. Looked a little weird, a bunch of grown men out in the backyard, but it was cool. And we've redone it ever since. So this year, we're going to do a Planet Strike kind of thing, and I am, and it's the Fanaticus' turn to host it. So I'm trying to figure out how to put together a fortress. And we've done this, you know, we did this when we were founded. We did a community event where we did a massive siege, and we actually built a 18-inch, 8-foot-long wall built in, like, 2-foot sections. And I've got that wall downstairs in my hobby room right now. So that's going to play into it. I'm going to take some of these, figure out how many of these things I need and create a fortress kind of thing so we can do a planetary assault.
Because he was talking about, like, you want to buy, like, a whole bunch of the Bastion models and stack them up like crazy because... If you don't, the Bastion models can be stacked one on top of each other to create really big towers and things.
Yes, they can. I'm looking at cost and time.
Yeah, that can get expensive in a hurry at $30 a pop.
Yeah, but they show the picture, but they don't show you how to make it. That's probably for next month's White Dwarf, which is far too late.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll eventually show you, but it'll be far too late, and I really don't feel like going through trial and error to figure it out. So I'm just going to recreate the walls that we've already built, kind of maybe set them up a little bit more.
So they don't actually show you how to do the different configurations in the box kit?
I don't know. I haven't opened mine yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right then. Well, whatever. Let's move on here. A little more news. We've got another about 12 minutes or so left of the show. Let's talk about some of the upcoming codexes. Obviously, there's been a lot of debate about which one's coming out next. I guess it was just recently announced the Space Wolves are up next in October?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any more debate. Was it yesterday? The 7th of July... In issue 52 of their newsletter, they came out and said Space Wolves in October.
So I remember there's some rumors one was coming out in August, but obviously that's not going to be the case. The next one is the Space Wolves?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Do we have any really details about it? I know there's lots of rumors swirling around what they're going to be, but...
you know me, Jason. I don't read those things.
Yeah.
But if I were a betting man, I'm going to think most Space Wolf players are, one, going to be happy. Actually, I'm going to say, I'm probably going to be sad, because the Space Wolves codec is tight. I mean, it's hardcore. It's as hardcore as it gets right now. And the only thing they're going to possibly do is alter it to a point that Space Wolves players are probably going to feel a little dejected. They're not going to play with all their toys like they're used to anymore, which is normal. I mean, face it, it's not going to be the same. So you've got to admit that change is coming. Mm. But I think you're going to be happy because it's going to be bigger and it's going to be deeper. And it's probably going to do meshing well better with the way the game plays. I think the army that's going to get punked the worst is going to be 13th Company. Just like all these variant lists from the Eye of Terror, and the 13th Company is the only one to survive so far. I think if you have a completely 13th Company list, get ready to bend over. It's just going to happen to you. And I think what's going to end up happening to you, and this is me best casing it, is that Wolfen are going to be elite choices. And then if you take the special Wolf Priest character, like, what's his name? Wolfgar, I think?
I don't know.
Wolfric. It's actually Wolfric, I think. Well, if you take the special Wolf Priest character, then they become troop choices. So it's going to be that kind of a change to a point. And, you know, I think your scouts, everything's going to be internal, so you're not going to be referring to the Space Marine Codex anymore. So it's going to be its own standalone book, but... If you don't like change, if you hope it's going to be better than it is before, I wouldn't bet on it. It's probably going to be just as good, if not a lot different.
Okay, so it's not like there's any real obvious problems with the army as it exists now, for, say, 5th edition, they got to really address.
Yeah, I think it's tight. I mean, the fact that you can take up to 5 characters in that list, it's just incredible.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk a little bit about more rumors with codexes. We always heard, it's kind of earlier was the debate, Space Wolves and the Necrons. So, obviously, Space Wolves are next. Do you think Necrons are coming out after them? Maybe end of the year, very end of the year, early next year?
You know, Jason, even though I try to stay away from rumors,
yes.
I get a lot of
I'm forced you to make guesses here, I know.
Yeah, well, no, I get a lot of peeps that tell me things, and it's a tie between Necrons and Dark Eldar.
Is it really? Okay.
Yep, it's a dead tie. And I think it all depends on whether or not GW can figure out the Dark Eldar. And what I mean by figure it out is what's their place in the story. If they can't make them, the Dark Eldar players listen, because if they can't make them unique enough to stand out as an army, then they're probably not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go the way of the Chaos Dwarf or the Squat. That they've got the, it's up to the development team to figure out how unique they are, what makes them different from the Eldar, other than their storyline and kind of some pretty models. They literally have to be different rule-wise. So it's a toss-up. Necrons are pretty easy changes to make. You know, they could probably add a couple more units from the old days, make Weeby back better, and bingo, they're done. So there's no rule, there's no mystery in that one.
Because the Dark Eldar really haven't been updated since even 3rd edition, right?
Yep.
They're still running old codex. You can't even buy the figures in the GW stores. You got to special order them.
Some Dark Eldar players I know are proud of the fact that they still run the original codex that's been updated once for grammar.
Okay.
And it still kicks everybody's butt.
Yeah, I played them once, and it wasn't fun. But, I mean, I guess what do you mean by unique story-wise? Obviously, the Dark Eldar are basically the Eldar who have been corrupted by the forces of chaos. And, you know, they're very torturous and murderous. I think my own friend says the line is, pray they don't take you alive.
Right.
Yeah, they think it's maybe trying to make it more distinguished from the normal forces of chaos. Is that the idea?
Well, it's going to be all in the background story, but they have to, you know, if you want to use the fantasy variant, the Dark Elves, it has to be that unique. Already we know it's exactly unique between High Elves and Dark Elves. We get it. It's very easy. It's not so prevalent with Dark Eldar and Eldar. So they have to really come up with rules and game concepts that really bring that kind of murderous flavor out.
I guess both Eldar and Dark Eldar can play that kind of rapid strike force, right? That's what I seem to see a lot of the Dark Eldar plays, where they race up the little skimmers and they drop your guys off. Next thing you know, you're in close combat, which the Tau is a bad thing, but...
Right. Exactly.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they come up with it. Then also, another army that hasn't seen an update is Inquisition forces.
Right.
I know there's some people complaining about that. Is there any... I don't know, I mean... They're also one of those rare armies not available in the stores.
And that was bound to happen. I think if I were... Let's play the game. If I were GW, I would think that the Inquisition codexes got out of control from the 13th Crusade, or from the Eye of Terror campaign years ago. And the only one that really is a viable army is the Sisters of Battle.
Okay.
Because that's been there from time immemorial. They've always been there, whether they've been mainstream or not. And I think the problem you have with the Inquisition armies is, again, making them unique. And if and when we do see a new codex for them, it's going to be all of them in one book. It'll lend itself very well. You know, you have your Inquisitor, both Headquarters and Elite. Just here's the different war gear options for each of the three ordos. And then if you want to be radical, you do this. And then based on what ordo you follow, you're allowed these choices.
Okay.
Based off, you know, Grey Knights or Sisters of Battle, or what we've heard is the Adeptus Abartes will make a play in that book too.
Do you think they ever might just split that codex up, say Sisters of Battle by themselves, or does that just not fit with the storyline the way the Inquisition works?
It's actually a fact that the armies don't justify a big enough book.
Okay.
They could be easily done with separate books. Now, Sisters of Battle probably could make a very... They have a lot more history than the Grey Knights, but it lends itself better to one book. I mean, look at the Space Marine Codex. How thick is that thing? And that alone could cover all three ordos very easily.
Okay. And the last one on the list is kind of the Tyranids. I mean, they're not... When did their codex come out? It's not too long ago.
No, it came out maybe 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know why people say that one's broke. That one's still very solid, still very new. I think it's just wishful thinking of a bunch of people that think Tyranids are broke.
I think there's a few things that basically 5th edition kind of made irrelevant for the Tyranids. It's been a while since I built a list for them. They're kind of my, quote, second army, unquote. I never really play with them, but I do, like, I have the codex. I build armies every now and then. But, you know, there really isn't a lot of huge changes they need to address them. I don't think so, but It still seemed to work pretty good. I know this is the reason I add these guys to the list, because John was on the show back in episode 10, who I wanted to show up tonight, but I guess he's at class. He's the one who brought up the idea that the Tyranids are getting a new codex. There's a rumor about it, but... You know, I wonder, though, going back to the Dark Elder and Inquisition, if those guys get a new codex, you think you're going to see new plastic figures and new, that are going to actually be available in mainstream stores, or is it still going to be specialty things?
And you know what? I failed to mention it. That's also the other reason why, if they can't get Dark Elder together, they'll probably throw a Necron at you, because they need new models. GW said that's why they're pulling them. The models are atrocious. They're horrible. They're second edition sculpts for the most part, I think. Or they harken back to that style. They just don't live up to the standard. And if I were GW, I'd be embarrassed to have them on my shelf.
So that's why they're special or only?
Yeah. So I think you're going to see new models. If Necrons come out, you're not going to see new models. You can't really perfect on the Terminator look. Yeah. Except you're going to see new units, a couple new units maybe. But yeah, as far as Dark Elder, you definitely see a whole new line. Which is, might be the reason why it's taken so long. You know, that whole line is not easy to revamp.
Yeah.
And you have to address the fact that most of your players then are going to be kicked because they're going to have to buy all new models.
Well, as long as they keep the same unit names and, you know, they still could use the same... I guess it depends if they're going to totally redesign the entire army from the ground up. You might not be able to.
Yep.
And I mean, GW can always say, screw you, and we're not going to allow your old models at tournaments, but...
They wouldn't say that. They allow... I play with all my old Harlequins.
Oh, okay.
So, they won't do that.
Let's see, what was the last thing? Well, I guess we're just about done here. Why don't we totally get crazy, a wild rumor here. We all know there's rumors of Space Hulk coming back. You've heard these, I'm sure?
I have, and...
You excited?
I hope this one is true. I really do.
Did you play the original Space Hulk game? That was way before my time in playing Games Workshop stuff, so I never got to play it.
Jason... Not only did I play the original, I have 5 of the original box sets.
Really?
Yes. If you want to play it, I'm more than willing to play.
Awesome.
Personally for me, and this is true for most devotees of Space Hulk, this is one of the best games GW ever did. It's a beautiful game. It's very stressful. I mean, you just get into it and... I can't tell you. I mean, the game is just wonderful. Not only do I have 5 original box sets, I've got rules to play it on the 40K version. I've even adapted some rules to create my own kind of variant of it. But Space Hulk very much lends itself to the whole mythos of Warhammer 40K, and it's what got me started into it. So if they redo this, I am so there.
So we should say, I guess, Space Hulk is kind of an old game where it pits the Terminators, the Space Marines, against... They're basically going into these kind of abandoned ships trying to hunt down Tyranids who have taken on residence in them.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, anybody who's interested, you can go online, and there is a deep, deep fan base for Space Hulk. I mean, it's even deeper than 40K itself. People are devoted to the task of taking on every new codex and updating it for Space Hulk rules. I mean, right now you can go online and they do Necrons, Eldar, Chaos. Everything is in there. So people who don't want to play 40K can... buy the models, and then just go and play Space Hulk this way. There are Space Hulk tournaments. It's just insane.
Well, what I will say, though, is if this game does come out this year, we'll definitely do a review of it on this show. We'll definitely do a review of this game, because I'm looking forward to it. I love the idea of it. I really look forward to actually playing it. Some of the crazy rumors I've seen are, one, there's going to be plastic tiles, which I guess is not terribly crazy, because the old game had cardboard ones, which, okay. Yeah. The really bizarre one is going to be batteries and lights.
I've heard it every which way. Some of it's hard to believe because some of it's wishful thinking of the people that actually build the 3D versions of the Space Hulk and stuff. But, I'm more into the thinking that it's going to be plastic along the lines of the planetary empires. And,
okay, yeah.
I think it's going to be more plastic like that. I don't think they're going to go any high tech. I mean, think about it. They want... The game is designed for 12-year-olds and up, and a 12-year-old's got to buy the game and play it.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see it, but you're going to see the detail commensurate with that, with a veteran's going to go, ooh, this is hot. I like this.
That's why the batteries and lights leads me to always joke that I think GW is actually remaking the Omega Virus.
Yep, really.
Did you ever play that little board game?
Yeah, I did play that one. Now, Now, what we need to do, Jason, is I need to give you a rundown of the old version so that you can properly compare it to the new.
Yeah, probably sometime I'd like to get your games out and we'll give it a shot. So, but we're just about out of time. Actually, we are kind of out of time. We're about 45 minutes right now. So thanks for coming on the show, Jerry.
Hey, not a problem. Appreciate
and the usual you. Kind of stuff we have at the end here. You can track me down on Twitter over at @TT_Battlefield. And are you still making bacon on Twitter?
You know, my Twitter's actually gotten to more of how I hate mornings and a little bit of my political rants.
Yep, I get to see those every now and then.
So, you know, with my Twitter, you get a little bit of everything. Enjoy what you want. But most importantly, let me introduce you to something called unfollow if you don't like it. Take it for what it's worth. But mostly it's now about my bacon, my beer, what I'm cooking for dinner, and how much I despise the morning.
And Plants vs. Zombies?
Yes, exactly. You know, for those that have not followed my Twitter, I'm here to tell you that I am protesting mowing my lawn because at some point I do think that there's going to be a zombie apocalypse, and having a fresh, natural lawn is the primary defense in that.
I haven't actually got to play that video game yet. I mean, I've heard everyone who's played it says it's just fantastic.
It is. It's just addictive. I, you know, 7 hours later, I realized, oh, my wife is not happy.
All right, well, let's finally finish this up. Questions or comments, send them over to me at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. Look to have you on again, Jerry, so thanks for coming on. And
hey,
any last words you want to say before we sign off?
No, just enjoy the game you play and play the game you enjoy.
All right, sounds good. We'll see you guys next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
The Tabletop Battlefield is copyright 2007-2009 by Jason Rutherford and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.